G'day and welcome to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. We are breaking down round 16. We're saying goodbye to the bye rounds and hello to best 22 as we move into luxury trade season to close out the year. Let's go!
Just done it from nowhere.
G'day and welcome again to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. This is definitely not the third time I've had to do this intro. I am your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter at Ball Boys Fantasy. And looking as good as he always does over there, Luke Rogerson, mate, how are you?
I'm trying to think of a different thing to say this time. I was good the first time. I was bad the second time. How about I'm just neutral?
Yeah.
I'm flat. I'm flat because my fantasy team fucking sucks.
Yes. I've looked over it. And yeah, no, it's not good.
You've confirmed my suspicions.
Yeah, confirmed.
Put it this way, the whole list of the chopping block this week is a roll call from the Oxlongs, essentially. Yes. There's not one player on the chopping block that isn't featured at the Oxlongs.
Good gear. Third time's the charm.
Let's go.
Yeah, we have had to record this three times with a bit of technical difficulties, but we're pushing on today, so hopefully the camera holds out this time around. We are back to best 22. And the best thing about best 22, after the bye rounds, you get to move all those rookies off your field, all the terrible players off your ground, and put the good ones back on. The only issue with my team is that there's still terrible players on the field. What's going on? Why are they still there?
It's not all doom and gloom, mate. You did move up during the bye rounds.
I did. So, so on the bye rounds, we try and evaluate our performance, try and cling on to the positives. I did move up. I moved up about 2,000 spots from round 12 to round 16, which was a little bit under par, but I'll give it a pass. I wanted to get down to 2,500 was my goal, but about 700 spots off that. What about yourself? You did all right as well?
Yeah, I used a slightly different strategy this time around and tried actually going the other way. So we'll see how
point of difference there.
Yeah, so we'll see how it works out in the long run. But I decided to go in the wrong direction about 2,500 ranks, leaving me out in the desolate wasteland that is 6,000
plus. Hopefully, because you took that hit in the bye round, you're coming out with a banging team that's just chock full of premiums, best 22 players if you've sacrificed those points in the bye round. So that's good for you there. Hopefully, you'll come home with a wet sail. But let's talk about the round that was, and we're going to start by awarding the players who were the most thirsty during the round and those on the other side of the spectrum who were the most quenched.
I'm not going to hump for the third time.
Yeah, no, but we are going to torch this guy for the third time. Isaac fucking Rankin.
Give him the blowtorch, Mitch.
He frustrates the shit out of me because I was all up and about him at the start of the season. Little do I know that this guy is a fucking camel to his core. He belongs in the Samson Desert. Simpson Desert? Samson Desert?
I don't know.
Deserts. He lives in the sand because this man, he's not thirsty at all. He can go days without water. He had a great first quarter, a great second quarter, and I thought, here we go. Here's why I held on to this man. He had 60-plus at halftime. He had 16 touches at halftime, kicked a goal in that time. I thought, okay, we're on for a 120-plus here. Vindication for holding this man. Richmond, second half, it's going to be playtime for Isaac Rankin. 4 touches in the second half.
Yeah, it's quenched.
Less than 20 points. He saved that as well with a couple of tackles late. This man, he hates the pill. When the going's easy, he kicks his feet up. Just isn't interested in padding his stats, and that's not what we want to see, Luke.
Yeah, there were drop marks, there were holding the balls against. It was pretty insipid, to be honest. I think we need to talk about a man who would never display those types of camel tendencies.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
This man is the definition of absorbent and yellow and porous. Yeah. I didn't watch this game, but you did. And Nick Daicos, if there's an easy matchup, you can bet on this guy to make the most of it.
Yeah, in a round where there was a lot of terrible scoring, there was one man that we could rely on and trust to come in and put up the best score of the round, 137. I wanted to highlight a couple of instances that happened that just highlight exactly why this man is, he's right up there in the votes every week for the Sponge of the Week. He had three tackles on the game. I reckon he had probably a legitimate one tackle on the game, but those two other tackles that he got, there was two instances that I saw where there was a gang tackle, at least two players, him and one other player, or him and sometimes two other players, that got called holding the ball, and he just had to have a hand on the body, just an arm around the shoulder. And as soon as that holding the ball was called, he's demanding the ball. He said, "You're right, Ned Long, go, you fuck off. I've got the free kick here. Side bottom, no, go away. I've got the free kick." And he got that extra. He made sure he got the tackle, which if he didn't get that, I don't think he would have got the 4 points. Then he gets the 3 points and the extra point for the free kick against. So that kind of behavior is what we want to see. There was literally one tackle where I'm pretty sure it was Steele Sidebottom who was tackling the player. And Nick Daicos just had a hold of this guy's arm, just literally around his wrist. And that was enough for him to go, "Yep, that was my tackle. I'm going to take the free kick." And the umpires just went, "Hey, you're Nick Daicos. You can fucking have it."
I love that his teammates do the same thing. Yeah. They don't care. It could have been even bigger if he kicked straight. It could have been a 150. But 137, I was happy to take that with the VC. Let's review the round with Bogs and Flogs.
Let's do it.
And the winner of the Norm Smith medal.
You're an embarrassment to what you do, mate. You're an embarrassment.
All the way back to Thursday night. Best on ground. Now, the interesting thing here is our awards that we've given here both scored the same amount of points. Mm. So do you want to talk us through the Flog first?
Well, the Flog and Bog, Connor Rosie and the Iceberg, you guys can pick which is which. But Connor Rosie has been getting it done. I tell you who hasn't recently been getting done, and that's the Iceberg, because he hasn't in the last couple of weeks had a role that we can rely on. And for some fucking reason, after we endorsed trading that guy out to just about anyone who'd listen, he then has more CBAs than both of the Ruckman.
Yeah, he was the highest CBA getter, right?
And it goes on to get a 120. Yeah. So this is rough. Maybe you could make a case that last week, the reason he was a little lower on the CBAs was Connor Rosie went back in there for a fleeting moment. And with Rosie back at halfback, it was the Iceberg show in the middle.
Yeah.
But this one's a little bit killer.
And your boy, Horny Boy, he you know, barely played. So, you know, only 11% CBA. So those CBAs are gone.
Yeah, how did I not give him the Flog just quietly?
That's what I was wondering myself. But he's just so far off the radar.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, and Connor Rosie, just the stalwart that it is, Connor Rosie in our defense line. He's had an absolutely fantastic season, career year. And that move to halfback's looking like a great one. Sydney versus Bulldogs. Brody Grundy gets the best on ground for this one. He has been a great trade-in.
I wrote in my review article this week that he's averaging like 120 plus in his last seven.
Yeah.
And continues on a decent run of matchups from here until the rest of the season. Yeah. So
we'll talk about some runs coming up, but his doesn't get much harder.
Yeah.
So yeah, big 137 was the only one that got really close. Well, got the same score as Daicos. So if you had him and Daicos, you look like you had a pretty nice week. The Flog to me, very niche areas here, but James Harms gets the Flog in this one.
Tell me more.
There was the third quarter. So Sam Darcy, my big trade in last week, he had three goals in this game. You think he'd have a good score? No, he had, I think, again, similar story to Isaac Rankin. An excellent first half, was everywhere, absolutely killing it. So I'm just pulling up his stats here. So he had 56 on the game, but in this first quarter, he had 25. Second quarter, 21. So he's on 46 at halftime. Do you want to know how many points he scored in the third quarter? Three.
What's that got to do with James Harms?
Do you want to know how many touches he had in that quarter? Zero. He actually scored all of his points for freeze four and hit outs. And the free four that he had was right in front of goal. He'd gone to take a mark and someone's chopped his arm, free kick right in front. He's had no disposals to this point. This is at the end of the third quarter. So this is your big key forward right in front of the goal. Just about to kick his fourth goal for the game. And James Harms goes, yoink, I'm going to take that run through, kicks a goal, and we get no points for Sam Darcy. James Harms, not only is that bad for your teammates, but it's bad for our fantasy teams, mate. What are you doing? That is flog behaviour.
That was long-winded. I didn't think we were ever going to get to James Harms there. Let's take to the Suns and Melbourne game. And best on ground here, you've got big Sam Flanders. Is that man back?
I'm eating my words a little bit here because I was recommending that no one go anywhere near Sam Flanders. And look, it's not a score that makes you go, wow, I wish I had Sam Flanders. But he's fucking cheap, man. He's in the 600,000s. He's down like 400,000 on the year. So it is something that maybe we do need to start to pay attention to. The role, exactly the same. He had one CBAs, but again, these heat maps, the last 2 weeks, the heat maps have looked a lot better. So
it looks like he might be given that license to get up the ground a little bit more and do as he pleases. So, like you said, super cheap and maybe a perfect candidate for a 23rd premium.
Yeah. Well. A little shout out to Noah Anderson as well, who was absolutely stinking it up. I believe he was getting a bit of a tag, but scored 44 points in the last quarter. So he only scored 93 on the game. So it tells you how he was going before then, but did save his score. And I was very, very thankful for that because it was looking good.
You want to drive by Clayton Oliver?
Yeah, it just sucks. Just, yeah. I thought Gold Coast Suns, easiest matchup for midfielders. But I keep forgetting that's the old Clayton Oliver. This is the new, shittier version of Clayton Oliver. And maybe that's on me for just hoping for more. But no. Still sucks, so still is the flog.
Fair call. Let's head on over to the Hawks-North Melbourne game, which was a chance for North Melbourne to, I think, consolidate after a great win against Carlton, and they did not. Nothing of the sort,
yeah,
did
that's
they?
Ugly.
But in a silver lining, Colby McKercher is looking awesome across halfback. I think he was the only Rooter ton up in this game, yep. Even with a couple of late points there, but 34 touches. Getting it done.
He's threatening to have a massive game, but he keeps like 34 touches here, one tackle, four marks.
Yeah, where are the big mark
numbers
at UTAS?
Where are the marks and tackle numbers? That's what I'm.
The Hawks.
That's where I'm waiting for that to happen. But
at his price, he doesn't really need to if he keeps popping hundreds.
He's been a great pick. I brought him in this week and was very, very happy to do so. Basically, got as many points in as I possibly could. So my trade-ins were fine. He scored 2 points less than Jordan Dawson. So that was the guy who I would really want. So for someone who was basically 200K or 300K cheaper, you'll definitely take that. The flog, his teammate, however, this is disgusting. Harry Sheezel, 65.
Did you see how many CBAs he got to attend, bud?
Was it zero?
What? Not quite zero, but why the fuck in a game where you get done by 100 points, are you not playing your best player around the ball?
Yeah, why is Luke Parker in there for 28 CBAs?
This is not North Melbourne winning by 100 points.
Yeah.
This is them getting pantsed and playing their best player away from clearly where the pill was. I didn't watch this game. But yeah, to me, that is very, very frustrating, and I don't know why you wouldn't
there was 20 times in that game where North Melbourne getting as smacked around as they were went, let's put Luke Parker in the center and keep Sheezel forward. Let's do that again. Really, guys, are we really doing that?
We saw the best of that move last week when they're on top, but they're not going to be on top every week. They might have to pull that lever.
This is the concern, and I still have confidence that they're going to go away from that game and go, that obviously didn't fucking work, and they'll be better than that. But this, this is obviously his clearly lowest game. His only other game below 90 was an 81 against Collingwood. So it is one we're going to have to forgive, but one or two more of those and we're going to have to look to trade him out. But yeah. I guess a flog for this one.
Collingwood and West Coast, Dacos and McCarthy can have the ball. McCarthy backed up his big first debut score with another one. So his cash is just going to be cartwheeling.
So here's a question for you just on the McCarthy thing.
Yep.
And maybe this should be saved for more of a strategy chat, but is he someone we can have on field? Legit. He's just gone back-to-back 90s.
So the question more is...
101 and 95.
Do I have to have him on field? And the answer may be yes.
I think if you have to have him on field, it's not disaster.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing in the world. We've obviously seen previously, like, rookies are rookies. I know he's a mid-season recruit, so maybe it's a little bit different. But yeah, if worse comes to worse this week and you can execute some trades and it means that you've still got him on field, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Would I rather have McCarthy or like Clayton Oliver on field?
Yeah, and like, there's a host of guys you could ask that question.
Yeah.
That we'll talk about in the chopping block. The other thing that we'll probably talk about in strategy chat as well is there's actually a lot of these cash generators that have just recently come to us, and so haven't completely reached their upper limit. So when do we cull those is another question.
Yes.
But we are getting ahead of ourselves. In that same game, Collingwood and West Coast, the flog is West Coast South in the Southwest.
This is a bit harsh.
No, I just wanted to say that thing that I made up.
Yeah.
Because a few people may have gone to the West pick, but yes, as I just said, he went south in the Southwest.
I was always a bit cagey on this one. He got subbed out tactically. He kicked a goal in this one as well. So... I mean, four touches, obviously, is not great. But yeah, I don't think he's going to be our North Star.
He's not the flog, just to be clear. We just wanted to do all that gear. So Richmond and Adelaide, the bog for me here has to be Tom Lynch.
Okay, you have to explain this for me.
Because this game was so fucking nothing. And it was so fucking boring.
It was the worst.
This was the only thing fun to watch in this game.
How bad could Tom get?
Not only were Richmond so bad, but even the way Adelaide put us away was fucking boring.
Oh, yeah.
So watching Tom Lynch punch guys in the back of the head, I thought I tuned into a little bit of Sunday fight night.
He wasn't happy. He wasn't happy.
What was he? You tweeted about this.
Yes, he had negative 15 at halftime. Had not touched the ball and had given away 5 free kicks.
He was getting railed by Butts, which is ironic because normally Butts is getting railed.
Yeah, nice. He had Butts behind him and Jordan was there too. and he just was not happy. Kept 5 free kicks with no other stats.
Mm.
If this was a basketball game, he would not come back onto the field. He'd be sitting there. They'd already used their sub. And I imagine if they had the sub there, you might just be like, Tom, don't. Just stay in the locker room, mate. Don't come back out. But he came back out, kicked a goal, ended with 3.
Yeah, I think he's on for a holiday too, unfortunately, Lynchy. The flog in this game, I've thrown Isaac Rankin in there, but Jordan Dawson too. Jordan...
He turned up.
He beat my Moz.
He did. Spicy take Moz.
He did. I don't know why I pretend to have high standards on this podcast. My team fucking sucks. But Jordan Dawson, like, it's the Richmond matchup.
Yeah.
We wanted to go big, and anyone who didn't have the VC on Dacos and went into Dawson, not impressed.
Not the greatest. Also, just a little drive-by to my boy Sam Berry here. 89 points with the goal.
Is Berry still getting around?
No, he's not. So 89 would have been nice a few weeks ago instead of all those 60s you gave me. So
stench.
Yeah, that sucks. Frio versus St Kilda, best on ground. You've got Luke Jackson here.
I've got Luke Jackson, and this is more for a body of work than what he did on the weekend. But the fact that this guy is now going into the midfield when Darcy goes into the ruck is just another string to his bow and is coinciding with good scoring. You look at his stat line here, he only had mediocre hit-out numbers, but he actually had 8 tackles, I believe. And if you have a look at it, I think from memory, there were only 24 CBAs in the game, and Darcy and Jackson combined had 32 CBAs.
Yeah, they had the same amount, or basically equal to each other, 16 and 15. So, yeah, 31.
I'm no mathematician, but I think that means one of them was playing midfield at some point.
Yeah, and I don't think it was Darcy. he's not going in for those ground balls.
Well done, Luke Jackson.
The flog for me... And this is the last straw. Caleb Sarong. Yeah, he's done. His time at Richmond is over. It was a nice little run there when he was beating up on some easy teams. Teams got reminded of the fact that, hey, this guy can play football. And so the 62 means that in his last two where he had 137 against Essendon, in the last 2 weeks he's averaging less than 100.
Did I see that it wasn't even Windhager?
Oh, there was talk about it. I actually didn't watch this game. If he didn't get tagged, and if you watch this game and can confirm that he did not get tagged, I'll throw up. I'll absolutely throw up.
I went to the Twitter sphere and saw talk of Hugo Garcia, but I don't know if I believe it. So tell us in the comments what the fuck happened to Caleb Sorrell.
18 touches. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I think his first quarter was also decent. I want to say he had like 25 in the first quarter. I thought, okay, here we go. We're gonna get through this game at least with a cheeky ton. Yeah, 25 in the first, then 12, 8, 17. That is unbelievably bad. So yeah, you're out. It's wrong.
Should we talk some strategy, mate?
Let's talk strategy because it's a different phase of the year now. We have gone through the first few phases where we've had fix-up trades, we've had upgrade season, we've had the buy rounds coming up. We are now moving into, I don't know if we're exactly there yet, but some teams will be, some teams will not be. We're into luxury trades, which is my favorite part of the year.
Yeah, your intention here is to play the Uno reverse.
Yes.
Because typically you've been going well up until this point of the season and then you've shit the bed.
The best way to not fuck up luxury trades, have a shit team.
Never get there.
Yeah, and just keep having duds to upgrade.
Yeah, this is a wise move from you, I reckon.
But in all seriousness, for those people who are actually doing well and we're trying to help them, what is the best way to spend our trades in the back half of this season? There's a bit of debate, I think, about getting the best 22, as in getting all the players that you think are going to be the best players from here until the end of the season, versus a strategy that popped up last year, which is running with maybe 23 or 24 premiums, and maybe at the sacrifice of maybe not getting the best of the best, but having those last couple of spots being like, you know, a revolving door of players that could potentially get it done on any given week. Where do you sit at the moment? And does it differ depending on team to team?
Oh, it definitely does. That to that last point, it definitely does, because my team is fucking obnoxious, so I wouldn't even be entertaining this strategy. But I like the idea of going for a 23rd, even 24th premium for two key reasons. First key reason, and I think this is the reason that brings you unstuck, is that it just gives you a sense of purpose in terms of, you know, exactly every week when you come in that you're trying to improve your team, and even if it's your bench, you're trying to improve your team. So I think it will prevent maybe what you've experienced in the past, which is indecision around who goes out, getting scared of tag or no tag, yep, or weather conditions or whatever the case is. And then the second...
That's a good point. And I think, you know, philosophical, but yeah, it's a good point in terms of this is the... It's very realistic at this time of the year, maybe in another couple of weeks for some teams, but soon we're going to be trading out, and people experienced it this past week with Berkman to Butters. Again, apologies for that. But you could very easily trade out more points than you're trading in.
Well, that's the second reason that I want to like quickly touch on it, is the fact that we spend all this time trying to predict, you know, good matchups versus bad matchups versus tags versus new roles versus all this kind of stuff. And I think when it goes well, it is obviously highlighted. Let's say Essendon v Richmond a couple of weeks back, Nick Martin and Zach Merritt both effectively go 150. Mm-hmm. So everyone looks at that and goes, your target matchups. But I reckon there's just as much evidence to say guys come into a good matchup and get a mediocre, if not, you know, worse than average score. So trying to put that into a luxury trade context, are you not better having 23rd and 4th so that you've actually got the ability to loop some guys and maybe save points there than you are just speculating on whether a guy has a good matchup or doesn't?
Yeah, I do agree. I think that what I'm going to try and preach this season is I want to go through and basically look at who are... Because we all talk about the top 6, the top 8, whatever, but it doesn't work in a way where there's like this nice little cutoff where, okay, you get to 8 players and that here's the delineation of that's exactly a nice little neat bow on it. It is like the difference between number 1 and number 2 could be like 5 points. The difference between number 2 and number 6 might be 5 points. The difference between number 6 and number 23 might be 5 points. So there's like this kind of cascading a average that as you kind of move down the list. So I think it is very important to have like those uber premiums, those guys that you kind of think regardless of the matchup, they're going to be putting up a score that you can pretty confidently say, I'm going to be happy with that. And I think that will differ from line to line. So if we go through the defense, midfield, rucks and forwards, let's identify these players as the guys that we absolutely want to have before we start entertaining the 23rd premium.
Okay. Yep.
And this might be different. We didn't workshop this beforehand. But in the defense, which of the players, and let's count Nick Martin as a forward, so we won't include him.
Yep.
But in the defense, is there, which players are you wanting to say, I want to have this guy before I start to entertain a 23rd premium? If I don't have this guy, then I'm going to try get him.
Yep.
Then I'm going to get that 23rd guy.
I think with the defenders, I think it's very likely that we pick almost five, if not six, of these guys.
Yeah.
This I don't think will be the line where we tend to do it on, but I'm looking at Whitfield, Zorko, Wang. I'm looking at Connor Rosie. So I've got four already that I'm super confident in.
Yeah, and so Whitfield's in that list. Obviously, yeah. He's come down in price. He had his injured score.
Yeah, I don't think price has anything to do with this in particular. I think he's obviously had an injured score. Even if he were to not play this week, I would still put him in the list.
Yeah.
For when he is playing. So there's four I'm uber confident in. Talk to me about names like now Harry Sheasel, Lockie Ash.
See, I don't think Holmes. I would include those guys in the list.
Okay.
I think they're rounding it out, but you could have a different combo of those guys and not feel like, okay, if I've got Max Holmes but I don't have Sinclair, I'm not like, I've got to get Max Holmes to Sinclair. Do you know what I mean? Like, say even if I think Sinclair's going to out-average Holmes, the difference is going to be marginal, I believe. So that's not where I'm spending my trades. But if I had, say I had like a Mills sitting there and I didn't have Wang, I would want to make that trade. And then I'd also like to get
Miller. I was going to say, that might be more of a surgery than a trade. you could help yourself. I think I'm actually prepared to add a fifth name to the list. And
okay.
This one you might disagree with, but I think I'm going to add Lockie Ash to the list. Now, hear me out. So, Lockie Ash, I think, has been the victim of not having just this enormous ceiling that some of the other guys have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of discounted him. But this guy has only gone sub 100 four times this year.
Wow.
Four times. And you know when one of those times was? It was the most important time.
Round one.
Because
yeah.
That was when we had to make the choice.
Do
whether
you trade him or you hold him?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where everyone traded.
Correct. And I know that there's no big ceiling scores there, but this guy's averaging 104 on the season, yeah. And with only three under a ton, I'm going to actually add him as the fifth name.
Yeah, so Lockie Whitfield, just as I was checking as well, if you take out that injured game, he is averaging 108. So I would definitely have him in there. So, Ash is an interesting one.
Well, the only question on Sheasel, let me add this as well, the only question on Sheasel is what we saw on the weekend with the role.
Yeah, and that is enough to me to say, I'm just going to leave it.
Just park it, now. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he could be, if we look back in retrospect at the end of the season, he could be in that group. He still is averaging 105 on the year, yeah. Which is definitely, I think, up there.
And let me know if you disagree, but I don't think the defensive line is necessarily where we're looking to have, where we're going to get the best bang for our buck with the 23rd premium.
I don't think so as well. So you're going to have a pretty chock-a-full back line, I think, there. But if we go to the midfield, the names here are quite tough. I think... Talk to me, Dawson, to me,
yep.
Clearly. Brayshaw, is he there? As a guy you've got to have before you start looking at 23 premiums.
Look, I think he is. If you put him in perspective compared to, let's say, Lockie Ash, Harry Sheasel, he's averaging 2 to 3 points more than those guys. And if those guys were sort of maybe guys, then I think that probably makes Brayshaw a yes guy,
yep.
Even though it's not as convincing as what we've seen previously. So who have you... You've said Dawson. Did you say Dacos?
Brayshaw. I'm going to say Dacos.
Yeah, let's throw Dacos in there. You start... I mean, Marcus Bontempelli is a name that you'd think we'd be talking about.
He's averaging fucking 96.
This is insane, and this is what I mean. A name that I'm actually willing to put in there, especially if Essendon are willing to persist with Zach Merritt out of the midfield, is Jai Caldwell.
Yeah, well, he's the third highest averaging on the season.
And we,
which is kind of crazy because he missed a chunk of the year, came back, and he's had a 57 and 72, and yet he's still averaging 106.
Well, we mentioned the stat, and this was a few weeks back when you could have potentially traded him in, was that I think in games where he goes greater than 70% TOG and was it greater than 50% CBAs,
yep.
The average is obscene.
Yeah, it's like 110.
So I'm actually going to throw him in there. So that's four names for mine that are guys that I look at and go,
yeah
those are guys.
Get those guys before you start fucking around with 23 premiums. I agree. Yeah. I think it stops there as well. Like, I don't think
Tom Green or Zach Butters or Dunkley or any of these other guys.
Merritt.
I don't think you need to get these guys. Like, there's a range of different players, but I think those four guys are still the guys you're going to want to have. After that, like, Merritt and Butters could average the same the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Dunkley and Bont could average the same for the rest of the season. You sort of maybe, that's when the 23rd premium might be more advantageous to have. You identify a tag potential or there's a hard matchup. You do a little shuffling around in that position.
Yeah. And we're not obviously saying that you have those kind of four guys that we mentioned and then you have genuine duds there.
Yeah.
You need to have a combination of these guys, but week to week we're kind of saying that maybe it doesn't matter so much who they are.
Yeah.
You know, you could get a bit of Lupe Fiasco going and find some good scores.
100%. The Rucks, I think, is actually a very interesting talking point because Max Gawn's averaging 115 on the season. Some of us might have traded him out around, was it 15 that he had his bye? The next highest averaging is Tim English, but then Brody Grundy is coming with a bullet. Tristan Sherry has been underwhelming, 103 average. Darcy Cameron's there at 104. Roel Marshall has had his ups and downs, but since he's come back off his bye, he's going very, very well. So there's, what's that? Six ruckmen. And we're not even talking about Luke Jackson, who's also a ruck, but obviously he's going to be in our forward line. So six ruckmen. Who are the two rucks that we want? And how many trades are we going to spend on this position as we go through the end of the year? Because it's harder to pick than I think it has been in previous years.
It's pretty fucked up to say that I think it could be Max Gawn and Brody Grundy. Grundy's run to the end of the season just gets better coming off a 126 average in his last seven. He's gone 120 plus in five of his last seven games. And obviously, we know that some of the rucks can certainly score in line with that. But if you've had Tristan Sherry over the last 2 weeks versus a Brody Grundy, you've already given up almost, is it close to 70 points? Or am I talking out of my ass here?
I'd have to do the math. It'd be close to something like that.
So the other thing that I might also mention here, and you can, again, agree or disagree, is of all the lines, I actually think the rucks is the line where we can, with the most certainty, predict good and bad matchups.
I agree. I've always felt that way. Because it's a one-on-one kind of.
Correct. And there's not a tag risk.
Yeah.
So I think that you said before, how many trades can we use in this space?
Yeah. Well,
maybe it's more than we might think.
Yeah. It's definitely a place where, I would definitely take into account that scale of hardness or table indicating toughness, whatever it is you want to call it. One player that I feel quite strongly about being a top two ruckman for the rest of the year. I feel quite strongly that Roel Marshall is going to be, I think he, if I'm going to make a bold prediction here, I think he's going to be the number one averaging player from now the rest of the season. He's done it for years. There's been talks about him being not right. His last three games, he's gone 87%, 87%, 87% tog. He's come off his bye. He's not dropped below 105. The 105 was against Collingwood, who actually are a tough matchup for ruckman. He's gone up against the dual ruck setup for Frio and done his 119. He's done big numbers against tough matchups in the past.
Why'd you tell me to trade him to Sherry?
Well, I thought Sherry was going to be the other guy as well, and you're going to get an extra game. But Sherry has done three sub-100s in a row, and not the hardest matchups. So Carlton was a tougher one. But I was expecting more against Hawthorn.
I didn't check the stoppage stats for this game, but we did obviously flag that UTAS is a big ground. Maybe there's less stoppages, but
yes.
I haven't actually checked that.
They did get obviously pelted as well.
I'm guessing in a game where they get done by 100 points, it's not going to be a highly contested game, which might have influenced.
So he had 82 ruck contests, which is on the lower side. I will say that. So, I mean, 97 for the game. It's probably bang on average.
So no excuses, but I'm put it this way. At the moment, looking at English and Sherry, English with a tougher run to come, I'm not loving the look of my ruck combination compared to what I think some people will be looking at.
Agreed. Yeah, I think as weird as it sounds, I almost think Grundy and Marshall might be the combo. If I had those two, which would be an interesting combo to have, that's, to me, at least in the short term, the combo I like the most at the moment. In the forward line, I think we've got some layup picks here in terms of must-haves. Bailey Smith, absolute must-have. Kennedy, absolute must-have, in my opinion. Nick Martin, I think, is also a must-have. Is it time that we put Luke Jackson in that conversation?
In my opinion, there's two parts to why I say yes. The first part is, of course, the scoring. But the second part to me is what Freo have been doing as a team. Like, if you're, I can't always talk about this, but if your player's doing really well and the team's doing poorly, well, you might just be waiting for something to change. But if your player's doing really well and the team's killing it in that, and like people are going nuts, you know, he's in preview packages and highlight packages everywhere, playing that crazy role, looking like a you know, 195 centimeter midfielder or however the fuck tall he is. That's not changing for me if Freo are doing as well as they are. So I'll say yes to that at the moment.
So he's what's that, five? So Kennedy, Martin, Jackson, Bailey Smith. That's four. Sorry. Yeah. That's four. The next highest averaging player is McRae and then Christian Petrarca. Is that a nice, neat six? I think it almost is.
I think it is a neat six, but would you still extend to maybe that's a line where we want a 23rd premium, or are you now leaning more towards the midfield based on that discussion?
It kind of feels like the midfield has the most volatility between ceiling and floor.
Okay.
Like, yes, there's low scores in the forward line, but it's not, I don't think you've got quite the ceiling scores, especially when you're playing around. If you're doing a loop situation where you've got Rankin and Caleb Daniel on your F6, F7, I don't feel like either one's going to give you a massive score.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point.
I think they're both going to maybe give you an okay score and also a dud every now and again. Okay, maybe it's good to avoid the dud score, but the upside of the big ceiling is maybe not there.
Yeah,
maybe with the exception of maybe a Sam Darcy, who in certain matchups could go nuts, and he has a good matchup this round. But then afterwards, it gets a bit tougher. So, yeah, it is a good point. The midfield to me seems like the widest open position in terms of that back half of the top eight. Defense and forward line seem like a pretty tight knit group, and then the rucks, obviously, we talked about as a bit of a fixture proposal. So yeah, just a bit of food for thought, but I think there's a few targets there that you want to get those top guys first. Now, for me, the most amount of work I need to do is probably my forward line, because I don't have Nick Martin, Kennedy, or Jackson. So there's three targets, and I also don't have Jack McRae. So based on what I just said, I'm missing four of the top six. So
don't worry, mate. It's looking bleak at the Oxlongs too.
Yes.
Do you want to... geez, look, we're very slouched today.
Oh, but about.
Sorry. You want to chop, mate?
Yeah, let's chop.
That'll make you excited.
I love chopping players off.
Let's do it. Everybody was kung fu fighting. We're going to give out some free castrations. Get chopping, Mitch.
All right, chopping. We got some players that we want to get off. Rookies. We also want to trade them out. Rookies need to go. Now, we did highlight the maybe exception before. Tom McCarthy is averaging 98.
Yes.
Now, it's two games. But two games where it's not really been the easiest matchup for him. Carlton for defenders is pretty tough. Collingwood is just tough all around. He seems like he knows how to find the footy. He gets kick-ins. Could we treat him a little bit? I definitely don't think you're trading him. So I'm definitely, my plans for this week is I'm going to be putting the emergency on him. He does play on the Friday night. There's two Friday night games this week, just as a reminder. But he does play on the Friday night. You need to have at least an emergency on him. And if he scores another 90 plus score, that is absolutely worth putting on your ground and maybe doing something else with another spot. So instead of upgrading your final defender or your final midfielder to one of those top guys, maybe you can do something maybe in the forward line or something like that. So
yeah,
to me, he's the exception. But every other rookie, I think, needs to be off your field.
Definitely off the field. Talk to me just a little bit, selfishly here, but a little bit about some of these rookies that have come into our teams recently and who haven't potentially made as much cash as they could have, would you be looking to, I'll just give you an example. Let's say Zach Johnson, for example. Mm-hmm. So he obviously followed his good score with a poor score, but he's still got a break even of 8. Typically, that would be something that we'd be definitely waiting on. He's got cash to make over the coming weeks.
Yeah.
So would you tend to, even if you could upgrade him to someone half decent, would you instead look to upgrade, let's say, someone like an Adam Chera, who's just coming off a stinker and now has a reasonably high break even? Are you looking to move a Chera before you move a Johnson and target a decent matchup?
Yes. I think in most cases I would. Unless there's no way for him to go onto your bench and he has to be on field. Like, I have much more confidence in Chera scoring better than
him.
Yeah,
of course.
So if I can't, like, replace him with a McCarthy on field and he's stuck there, then I'd probably still just look to trade him out. And I don't think I'd want to wear a 30 on my field in best 22, which he's capable of putting up. So, yeah. But I think, like, we still have 8 rounds left until the end of the season.
Yeah.
There's not 8 rookies on your bench that you can cull to make an upgrade. So we need the guys that are in our side now to still keep generating cash so they can fatten up and do that. When we start to get closer to sort of like 3-4 rounds to go, then we can go whatever. It doesn't matter. But right now we need these guys to fatten up to still make the most of their cash, I believe. And I think, yeah, players like Liddy, players like Archer May, players like Ralston, like your boy Johnson there. These kind of guys can sit there a little bit longer, assuming they're on your bench, is probably the main thing. But I still want to get all rookies off field.
I've been selfish putting together the chopping block list. Jason Horne-Francis. To me, there's almost like no point in trading him now. I think the kind of quote coming out of Port Adelaide was, yeah, we subbed him off. He was obviously injured. We all knew that. But it was more preventative. And we've got a 9-day break going into our next game. And hopefully he's rested up and he can see some more midfield time. So is trading him now just genuinely just cashing in a loss and risking that he comes back into the midfield next week?
It does feel a little that way. And just the fact that he's lost so much cash, like it's going to take 300K to get him to
Luke Jackson.
It's going to cost nearly 400,000 to get him to Nick Martin.
Yeah.
Like it is a lot of money. So it's somewhere where you go, okay, is there a trade I can do elsewhere that's probably better than that, that costs less than that? Like to get that 400K, you're going to have to cull a great rookie or a mid-pricer down and it's, or you're going to have to do it over 2 weeks. You might be better off just crossing your fingers that he comes good and maybe looking elsewhere because he might come back out and score a 90. And compared to the F6 that we said was maybe Christian Petrarca, like he could outscore Petrarca this week.
Yeah,
that's definitely doable. The issue is when you've got those other guys there, but it might be easy to get to them from a Chad Warner, for example, who he and Horne-Francis any given week. Who knows? But there's 150K difference between the two.
I don't think anyone else in the world still owns Matt Roberts, but am I right in saying he's got to go?
Yeah, I was feeling for you because he...
he was on 0 points at halftime or something,
he put up a dirty score on the weekend. I thought...
just to be clear, I wasn't happy about holding
him. No, but...
it was forced.
45, that's disgusting. Oh, that's by far his worst game of the season. His break-even is now 120. And Frio, I want to say Frio are not the easiest matchup for defenders as well. So, where is Sydney? Yeah, so they're actually a red on the scale of hardness. So, does have St. Kilda afterwards, but no, I think he's someone that was... And because our defense is so good,
yeah,
you know, the bar is so high for the defense, he has to go before he bleeds more cash.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Have a look at a couple more names on that list, mate, and let me know who you want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, so Adam Chera, he can go. He sort of punched his ticket last week. Break even, I want to say, is really high. 995. You can do a lot with that.
You can. The only thing I want to ask you about in regards to someone like Chera, someone like Long, someone like Oliver, is we just talked about those kind of top four midfielders, Dawson, Caldwell, Brayshaw, and who was the other name that we threw in there?
Caldwell, did you say Dawson Chera, Dacos?
Dacos was the other one. So is it like, do I get the most bang for my buck by trading Adam Chera to Bontempelli or Adam Chera yeah. to Josh Dunkley? Or I know that the cash is now going to factor in with Adam Chera having a really high break even, but like, am I actually getting many points with that trade?
I wonder if there's a world where you can do both. Like, could you trade an Adam Chera to Bont, make 55K, and then do a trade elsewhere where you may be doing a, I don't know, whether it's a Chad Warner to a McRae or something like that. And you're just getting two better players with better roles in, you know, 1 week, potentially, especially if you still have rookies that are still fattening up.
Yeah.
Like, give them time to do that a bit more. That's definitely something you could do, because we've got unique situations where we've got worse players that are priced higher and better players that are priced lower. I mean, we think if Bont keeps fucking sucking like he does.
Yeah, well, if you think, I mean, let me have a look here. If you think, and this is a different line that we're operating in, but if you think that Sam Flanders now has a better role and more cash to make than Callum Mills as a defender, yeah. is like, there's a way that you could pocket more than 100K.
The thing is, you're doing is it's bringing in risk. It's bringing in risk and potentially just subbing out one problem for another problem, and then you're giving yourself less time to fix that problem with, like we said, 8 weeks to let go for the rest of the season. So we ideally want to eliminate problems, and it just feels like bringing in someone like a Bontempelli is not a problem versus Flanders coming in is potentially a problem. Like, yes, there's going to be maybe some tag games and some poor scores, but you know that he is capable of giving you 120 any given weekend. Whereas we don't know that with Flanders. Like, right now, we're cheering for 90s.
Fair point.
Which is not ideal. So those players are probably the trickiest, I would think. Those midfielders especially. So, yeah, Long, Chera, Oliver. So, yeah, because like me, Oliver, his last several games, it's so hard to pick. 41, 82, 130, 59, 109, 97, 76. Like, what do we do with that? Like, obviously, he's averaging 90, and I think he's just probably going to keep doing that, but it's just the range at which it happens.
That's it. Just be clear, yeah, these seems guys are all guys place. Who want to move. It's just a matter of we are getting shorter and shorter as the forecast
more
goes
deflated.
But yeah, it's the order of events. Talk to me about Isaac Rankin and Chad Warner in the forward line. So how much we kind of settled on a neat top six forwards that we both felt pretty confident with. Is that more of a priority to turn Rankin into a Jackson, to turn Warner into a, you know, Petrarca, or to a whoever it is down in the forward line?
Yeah, fucking luxury trades, isn't right? Maybe. I think both of them have big issues. I don't think the role is going to improve either one of them.
I think I want Adam Chera to hang around with a high break even more than I want Isaac Rankin to hang around.
You could be justified in saying that.
So Adam Chera had a poor score on the weekend, but prior to that, he goes 121, 108, 107, 120, 109.
Yeah,
that's above what I expect him to do for the rest of the season. But the high break even at this point, to me, doesn't matter as much. Isaac Rankin, you know, also comparatively has a pretty high break even. He hasn't been hitting 96s real
frequently. So he hasn't gone over 60% CBA since round, what was that, round six? Let me triple check that. Yeah, round eight, sorry. So since then, since round nine, he is now averaging... He's averaging 78. Like, and that's probably what he is. So, yeah, he's probably a higher priority than someone like that to go out, because we've got a extended sample size. His numbers are probably inflated based on what he did at the start of the year. But that's not changing, I don't think, anytime soon. So, yeah, no. I'd probably prioritize him going out.
Let's say 78 for Rankin versus, let's just call it like a 105 for Kennedy. What do you got there? 27 let's points?
Say, yeah, 25, I think.
And I don't think that there's a midfielder that I can trade in that's going to out-average Adam Chera by 27 points consistently.
No, you're probably right. It will cost you, though.
Yes.
Like, it's 300K. So,
yeah.
You're culling a fattened rookie,
yeah,
which maybe we don't have right now. That's sort of the weighing it up. Like, I don't have that cash to do something like that at the moment. Maybe it's to a McRae, who's 100K more. I mean, McRae's still probably going to average, what, 95, would you say? So there's still 15 points probably there.
Yeah, still a few points.
Is there 15 points for Adam Chera to someone else?
I mean, the weekend was very poor, but prior to that, you know, he was a guy that we had a lot more confidence in.
Yeah,
I think that the logic stands. Do you know what, yeah, what we're, the discussion we're having hopefully is applicable, yeah, to your players, and you're discussing, okay, well, who am I trading out? What do I expect them to average? Who am I trading in? What do I expect them to average? And you just kind of work out.
Because we are, and one of the things we'll talk about with luxury trade season is we're looking a bit more short term, but there is still 8 weeks to go. So you're still probably at the point coming out of the bye rounds that you're trying to get players that you're going to expect to be in your side for the rest of the season, bar maybe the last 1 or 2 weeks you might flick them out for, you know, some matchups or something like that. So you ideally want to get them on a nice run, but there's still 8 weeks. It's basically a, what is that, a third of the season still to go. It's a decent enough time that you're going to have these guys in, so try not to get too cute too soon. Would be, I guess, the case. And you popped English here as well, who...
Just as a question mark for that whole ruck scenario and, yeah, whether his run coming up. I mean, the next two games are not great. North Melbourne and Adelaide.
He's got 3 games, I think, in his next... Yeah, his next 3 games, North, Adelaide, Brisbane, all tough.
We can't have 80s from English when we're getting 130s from Brody Grundy.
Yeah.
If you want to climb the ranks, it's just you can't have that. But that's the thing about... So okay, I know we're banging on here and this podcast is going to go for forever.
I mean, this is what this most of the season is going to be about from now on.
Well, it begs the question, if you're looking for the most amount of points in the short-term future that you're going to get between the person you currently have and the person you want to trade in, I can genuinely see a scenario where Tim English goes sub-90 for the next 3 weeks and Brody Grundy goes 115-plus.
I don't know if I can go that far because, yes, he scored 80 on the weekend, but that's his... only his second score below 90 for the entire season. And he's versed Brisbane. He's versed Gold Coast. Like, he's played Collingwood. He's had these tougher matchups. So I don't want to be too reactive there, but some people might be thinking, yeah, fuck yeah, Tim English averaging 108. It is something that is on my radar, especially because his break-even has now gone up to 126. Yeah. 1.125 million. It's a lot of money in his head. You could do a fair bit with that. I just think he's further down in the concern department for me personally.
Okay, let's talk about some trade-in targets. We're kind of covering everything a bit hodgepodge today, but hopefully there's some value that people are finding in it. Let's talk about those defenders. I think the names you're going to hear are likely to be those guys that we talked, yeah, about as being top of the line.
Yeah, it's a bit more clear-cut, I think, in the defense. Whitfield. He is someone who's interesting because he's cheap, very cheap right now, 942K. He has a break-even 150. He versus the West Coast Eagles. And this could be a moot point because he might not play this week with the concussion protocol. I think they play on a... Are they playing Friday? Am I right in saying that?
McCarthy, you said, was loopable, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so Friday night. So we'll hopefully know early enough. But...
Well, the problem is you might know that he's playing, but there's an argument to suggest that...
You wait.
You wait, yeah. 150 is a big score. I mean, last time we said this, it was, of course, Zach Merritt. You know, see how that turned out. But... even if Lachie Whitfield plays and GWS get through to three-quarter time with a clean bill of health, is mm-hmm. there even a scenario there where they just go park Lachie for the last quarter?
I think that there's a small chance.
Yeah. The more likely scenario is that he just doesn't play because you yes. think it's a matchup that they're going to win quite yeah. comfortably. And that obviously is easier because it just makes everyone's minds up for them. But then we're asking ourselves the same question the following week. What about Dane Zorko, Lachie Ash, Wang? Are these guys that you want to make a matter of priority if you haven't already got them?
I'm going to leave Zorko for a week with the tough matchup against Port Adelaide. So I'm going to rule him out. Max Holmes, he versus Richmond this week. Now, he's on the borderline of that top six. But I probably would like to get him over someone like a Zorko. And remember, this is where these defenders can start to bleed into our midfield too.
He has shown a ceiling, like, I mean, 71 against the Lions, it's a harder matchup. But in Essendon and Gold Coast in the previous two, 146 and 131.
Yeah.
That shows me that he's got an ability to beat up on shit teams.
I think, yeah, this is a nice matchup for him as well. And with... Bradley Smith getting more of the attention recently, he could benefit. So, again, it could be your defense. It could be your midfield. But I like the look of him. Wang, to me, seems like he's D1, just by far and away. Started a little bit slower in this last game, but 109 still. He's gone 5 tons in a row, only one of them being a low below 110, which was a 109. He had a 76 against the West Coast Eagles, but then 3 games before that, all tons again. He's just been incredible. So far in the season, he's had 3 games below 100. That's incredible. So to me, he is the most must-have of all the defenders, and then maybe it's Connor Rosie, but I think a lot of us already have Connor Rosie. So if I'm spending up, it's to Wang.
There's a couple of interesting names I want to talk about in the midfield with you. So let's talk the Essendon boys first. So Merritt, the justification for bringing in Merritt this week would be 2 decent matchups in a row, cheapest chips compared to what Zach Merritt can be.
Yeah.
Is it enough for you to pull the trigger this week?
It could be. If I was desperate for an upgrade and he's all I could get to, I don't mind it. I think he will be better than what he has been. He's been bad enough for long enough that I've got doubts.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sitting here going, yeah, it's a home run play. It's Zach Merritt. He's been the 108 guy for 10 years, which is all true. But there's been enough shit games this year that he's given me doubts. Would you go Merritt or Caldwell if you had the option to do either?
I love the Merritt move if you have just want to throw caution to the wind and have nothing to live for, nothing to play for. sorry, I don't want to misspeak. But I love the Caldwell move if you want to consolidate a great spot and you like maybe are a little bit more risk averse. I think if I was a betting man, I think Caldwell is the guy.
Mm.
But I want to get a leg up on the competition for a discounted price and potentially get a guy who is massive at very much a discounted price, then Merritt.
Would you go slightly different comparison if we're talking top dogs? Would you go Caldwell or would you go Dawson to trade in this week? Dawson plays against Melbourne and Caldwell versus Gold Coast with Richmond the week after.
Yeah, Dawson does go Melbourne and then he Dogs, but then he goes Gold Coast.
So Dawson is 22K more expensive. Caldwell slightly cheaper. And Caldwell also has the lower break even at 95 versus Dawson's 129. A lot of the signs are leading Caldwell to me.
Yeah, I really like Caldwell too. You look at Dawson's last 4 and there's actually nothing really to write home about. He's kind of leaning on a few ceiling scores from earlier in the year. Yeah, I'll go Caldwell.
I think I'm there as well. I just want to, again, I'm going to take his average with those couple of low TOG games out. So any game where he's gone over 70% time on ground,
plus.
It's 116.5.
He's a weapon.
He's a genuine weapon. Only one game below 100 and that was a 97.
Yeah, I know I said the stuff about, you know, the risky high reward play is Merritt, but the safe high reward play could be Jai Caldwell.
Really is just staring us in the face. And he's I'd imagine he's lowly owned compared to Dawson. I think he could be cheap. Like, yeah, he's priced at 105, 106, but he could put 10 points on that. I mean, he's done that so far. The fact is this price is because he had that injured game and came back really gently.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And he's got a good run. So he looks like a good target to me in the midfield if you've got the money to go all the way up.
Can I talk to you about some Swans? Because Errol's been back for 2 games here and he, I'll say, saved his score a little bit on the weekend. But in the weeks that he's been back, last 2 weeks, Isaac Heaney is averaging close to 115 in those last 2 weeks. Isaac Heaney's scoring linked to the return of Errol?
The thing is, Isaac Heaney kicked 5 goals on the weekend, 5-0, and got a 117. I don't know if I want to rely on that to be replicable. I'm probably going to lean on the body of work that has been the entire season, more so than the last two games, personally. So, no, I'm not so sold on Isaac Heaney. Errol is interesting himself.
124 break-even for Errol.
I think you can wait a little bit.
I think you're probably right there. The one thing I will say on the Isaac Heaney thing is you're 100% right on the five goals, but Papley, Goulden, Mills now have been back, and there's another name I think I'm missing. Basically, Sydney are starting to get a competitive team back and have they beat Port Adelaide, I think it was, and then they obviously were, ran the doggies close this weekend. So I'm expecting for the back half of the season to see a more competitive Sydney, and I think that maybe lends itself to better scoring from their big guns.
Yeah, I can't remember who the other player was that you're talking about. Anyway, but yeah, that could be the case. I just, don't know if this is the time of the year for it with someone like Heaney. When there's, what's his price at, actually? Because he's not too far away from some other really good players. 977. So, he's more expensive than a Bond, than a Butters, than a lot of these guys. So
these are all guys that we just said fit into that bracket of just we don't know.
So I wouldn't move him out.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't trade him in, I don't think. Let's talk in the forward line. How much are we just paying up for those top... I'm going to say top two, especially in Nick Martin and Matt Kennedy, because they are expensive. Is it now the time of the year where we go, fuck the price, let's just go and get me a big dog? I will say Kennedy's got a break even of 129. He put up his first sub-ton since round five in an 86.
It's been crazy good.
Is he going to come down a little bit?
Yeah, Bailey Smith, we're obviously just assuming everyone has at this point. Yeah. The thing, and you mentioned the massive price discrepancy, but the thing that makes me think that this kind of pick could just be great is, you know, what the likes of Caleb Daniel and Isaac Rankin and even Horn Francis have been giving us. It's 25, even sometimes 30 points less than what Kennedy and Jackson have been doing recently. That's a lot of points.
I mean, it was 4 points difference between Rankin and Kenny on the weekend. I know Rankin played Richmond.
But in that game, you're looking at what Rankin's been giving us for 7 weeks straight, and you're looking the low score of Kennedy.
Yeah, we're just I guess, trying to prioritise other moves. Would you go Kennedy or Nick Martin if you had the choice between the two?
I think I'd still go Nick Martin.
Nick Martin does have a better run in Gold Coast Richmond. He's done it for longer. Probably has a higher ceiling. He definitely has a higher ceiling. So he's 166. And he has Richmond coming up in 2 weeks, which is when he did his 166. So, yeah, I think he would be, if I didn't have either of those two, I agree, I'd probably go Nick Martin first. It's only about 20K difference now. So I think that 20K to get Nick Martin is probably good.
Beautiful. We've chatted for a long time today, mate.
Yeah, we did, mate. There's lots to talk about. Luxury trade season, you know, it's my favorite time of year. I think it will be fascinating, especially this year, given the what we've got going on in especially the midfield and maybe some other lines where the top of the line is a little bit less clear and the strategy around that as a result is a little bit up in the air. So it'll be interesting to see what works and what doesn't work. No matter what I do, I'm sure it'll be the thing that doesn't work, and we'll learn from that next year. Anything else before we sign off, mate?
I'm done like a dinner, mate.
All right, let's call it there, guys. Make sure you give this video a big old thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button. Let's get to 4,000 subscribers by the end of the season, and we'll see you guys on Friday for the live show. Bye.